This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Friday's news of the weak U.S. job market has crossed the Atlantic and the Pacific, and concerns about a new recession don't appear to have been lost in translation. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson in for Kai Rizdahl. Today is Monday, September 5th. Hope you're having a great Labor Day. And it was probably a blessing that the markets were closed for the holiday here in the U.S. because it was downright ugly in overseas trading today. September is only 5 days old, and it's already starting to look like August when it comes to economic fear. Our New York bureau chief Heidi Moore says we should all buckle up.
If you want to know what the world economy is going to look like this fall, you could consult the work of the wisecracking author Dorothy Parker. She used to ask, "What fresh hell is this?" European markets have already started to answer that question today. There are rumors that Italy might get downgraded. That sent the markets into a nosedive, and regulators had to stop all trading of Italian bank stocks. The panicky mood overseas is going to get worse in September and through the fall, says Doug Roberts. He's the chief investment strategist for Channel Capital Research.
It's almost like the European version of the subprime crisis. It had a domino effect, the banking system, it was some of the mortgage systems, and then it kind of trickled down the line. That acted as the catalyst for a recession.
To solve those problems will take years. Kathy Jones points out that just because the calendar has ticked over, it doesn't mean the world's economic problems have changed. Jones is a fixed income strategist with Charles Schwab.
There's always a hope. You hear this often at the end of summer that, well, when people come back from vacation, the markets will return to normal, whatever that is. But in this case, these are problems that have been around for a couple of years. I think it's going to take a while to work them out.
At least September will give us an opportunity to get started. The real star of the next few weeks will be the Federal Reserve. It's holding a 2-day meeting starting September 20th. The subject will likely be employment. The outcome, many are hoping, may be more stimulus. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Well, here's an agency that could certainly use some stimulus, the U.S. Postal Service and its 650,000 workers. The post office is so close to running out of money, it won't be able to make a required payment to its retiree health care fund at the end of this month. To balance the books, the Postmaster General is recommending drastic cutbacks in service, which would mean huge layoffs. Congress will take up the issue tomorrow. Here's our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale.
Mail volume has dropped 22% over the past 5 years, and that's not just because of email and electronic bill paying. Bob McLean used to head the Mailers Council, representing most large users of the postal system. He says it's the economy.
Because of the recession, many companies have simply stopped doing a lot of their marketing, whether by mail or electronic means. And that means a loss of millions of dollars of revenue over the last 3 or 4 years for the Postal Service.
The postal workforce is already shrinking due to attrition, but the Postmaster General wants to accelerate layoffs by more than 200,000 workers. To do that, he'll need congressional permission to break a union no-layoff clause. Bob McLean says that's not likely.
Doing that during a recession, of course, means the elimination of a lot of well-paying jobs for middle-class citizens in congressional districts. And most members of Congress, during a recession, the last thing they want to do is to be the source of job cuts rather than job creation.
Postal service managers are also proposing to close underused post offices and reduce six-day-a-week service to every town in America. Some of the more innovative revenue-raising ideas include selling ads on the sides of delivery trucks and getting permission to deliver beer and wine. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, just like the Postal Service, Wall Street was closed for business today, and it was probably a good thing because markets overseas were a mess. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. President Obama spent Labor Day in Detroit, where he gave union workers a little preview of Thursday's big job speech. He said it's time to see if congressional Republicans will, quote, put country before party when it comes to creating jobs.
There is work to be done, and there are workers ready to do it. Labor is on board. Business is on board. We just need Congress to get on board. Let's put America back to work.
I guess we'll see how that line of attack works later this week. But here's one thing we do know for sure. Lackluster or non-existent job creation, like we saw in the government report last Friday, can itself keep the economy down. Persistent high unemployment saps consumer confidence and spending. It spurs home foreclosures. It makes businesses less willing to invest and expand. As we continue our coverage of the breakdown, our economy one step at a time, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has this report on job creation and getting America back to work.
Imagine a new reality show. It's called Hey America, Get a Job. And it has this edgy yet upbeat music. And here's our first contestant.
My name is Brittany Reichard. I'm 22. I live in Oregon. And I've got a job.
Brittany is one of the winners. And now she talks about the long odds she faced and how consistent persistence helped her land an entry-level marketing job in her field, environmental science.
The adults in the job industry are staying in their jobs longer. Young people coming out of college don't have a place to really fit in. And so it's just kind of keeping your arms open and trying to reach whatever you can out in the job market.
Her employer, meanwhile, could be a winner on reality TV, too. The company, called Columbia Green, has been growing by leaps and bounds. It's a roofing manufacturer that installs plants and soil on top of commercial buildings to filter stormwater. The green roofs can save building owners a lot of money on wastewater disposal and energy. Vanessa Kaichis bought the business 2 years ago.
Our products went national and most recently international with Canada, Europe, and New Zealand.
Kaichis expects revenues to hit $3 million this year and $15 million by 2013. She'll double the office staff to 12 next year. But this reality show celebrating job creation, well, it may not have a very long run. Because as much as we cheer for the few companies that are growing, it's not enough, not nearly enough.
Actually, I don't think we've seen any decent job growth since the recovery allegedly started back in June of 2009.
William Dunkelberg is chief economist at the National Federation of Independent Business.
Just to keep up with population growth, you need about 125,000 net new jobs every month. Then if you want to reemploy the 8 million people that we fired during the recession, we need well over 300,000 jobs.
That's every month for at least the next 3 years. While healthcare, hospitality, and manufacturing have been hiring, everything connected to housing, from construction to real estate, has been stuck in the mud. Still, with corporate profits up and companies sitting on piles of cash, why aren't they using some of that to hire up? Dunkelberg says it's a simple matter of not enough demand in the economy for goods and services, especially from consumers.
The problem with the weak consumer spending that we have is that the likelihood of a new employee being able to generate enough additional value to the company, sales or whatever, is pretty low, and so there's no good reason to hire.
And so many reasons not to hire. I caught up with David Allison at the factory he owns in suburban Chicago. Jet Finishers has about 50 employees and does industrial coating for tractors, military vehicles, and consumer electronics. Allison laid off a third of his workers in 2009. Since then, business is up and the factory's humming, but
the people we have hired when we've needed extra hands, we brought them from a staffing agency because we're just loath to bring anyone on permanently.
What would make you think twice about what you just said?
You know, that's tough. I've been thinking about this myself. It really comes down to how I feel about the future. We did hire a couple of people. We did make that decision, and I ended up letting one of them go again. What would have to happen is we have to see some sense that the growth is permanent, not just a temporary blip.
There's no shortage of ideas for pushing business owners like Allison off the fence and into hiring mode. Many in the business community support a payroll tax cut for employers, for instance. That would shave a bit off the cost of adding workers to your payroll.
I don't think a few percentage points one way or the other on a payroll tax is going to make any difference.
An employer tax cut would also add to U.S. government debt. Cheaper ideas include boosting exports, which are already a bright spot for the U.S. economy. President Obama says ratification of free trade agreements would create jobs in the manufacturing and service sectors. Another proposal, give immigrant entrepreneurs a startup visa to settle here if they create jobs. Many Democrats are calling for another round of spending on roads, bridges, schools. That would mean paychecks for laid-off construction workers and, most likely, a bigger deficit. Stimulus dollars have kept the 400 union workers at Oregon Iron Works outside Portland busy right through the recession, cranking out massive bridge fittings, boats, and streetcars. As that funding runs out, company vice president Chandra Brown worries about a drop-off in business. At all costs, she wants to avoid layoffs.
So I tell you what, even in the downturn, we are going to keep our best people. That's our number one responsibility, is to keep our currently fantastically trained welders and fitters, machines that you can't even find anymore.
It's unlikely any of the ideas now being floated would generate the 300,000 jobs we need every month to dig out of the unemployment hole. And with the economy actually slowing down, the best hope may simply be that companies don't start downsizing yet again. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The weak job market that's likely to be with us for a while is going to impact all kinds of things. What people study in college, where people decide to live, and even the answer to the age-old question, what do you want to be when you grow up? For author Daniel Pink, the answer decades ago started with a book.
One afternoon in 1974, I spotted a book my parents had brought home from our local library in Central Ohio. It was by a guy with a weird name, Studs Terkel. The title was in boxy black and red letters, Working: People Talk About What They Do All Day and How They Feel About What They Do. I was 10 years old at the time and cared about sports and not much else. So I read Terkel's interview with the baseball player, a relief pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. To my surprise, I ended up staying for the cab driver, the bank teller, the gravedigger, and yes, I'll admit it, the prostitute. Hearing real grown-ups talk about what they did for a living was a revelation. It was far more exotic and exciting than reading about phantom toll booths or some old lady's mixed-up files. I even asked my dad if I could see his office. In many ways, that book began my obsession with work, trying to understand what work is, how it's organized, and when it can become, as Terkel put it, a source of daily meaning as well as daily bread. Work, I've realized, is an amazing topic to explore. Psychology, economics, anthropology, and a few scoops of biology blended into a ginormous, fascinating smoothie. Think about it. Most of us spend over half of our waking hours at work. That makes it a powerful lens for examining who we are and where we're going. I left Ohio long ago and now live and work in Washington, D.C. This city can be an uptight place. It has a strange social convention. Apparently, you're not supposed to ask people you've just met about their jobs. We're dying to know, of course, but inquiring is considered intrusive, immodest, a bit uncouth. I don't care. Whenever I meet someone new, I always ask the same question, the question Studs Terkel planted in my young mind. So, what do you do?
Daniel Pink's latest book is Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. If you've got a comment, write to us at marketplace.org. Just click on the contact link. Coming up, the high-tech sector is booming. Seems like a logical place to look for job growth, except for one little thing.
Facebook might be worth $100 billion, but do you have any idea how many people actually work there?
Not a lot. We'll find out more in a bit. But first, let's do the numbers. U.S. markets were closed today for the Labor Day holiday. Markets were open for business elsewhere in the world, though, and you're going to wish they hadn't been. European stocks tumbled on renewed worries about Eurozone debt and the possibility of another recession. Britain's FTSE 100 ended the day 3.6% lower. Germany's DAX fell 5%. France's CAC 40 dropped 4%. Investors sought the safe haven of the Swiss franc and gold. It's hovering around $1,900 an ounce. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, Congress reconvenes after a summer break. The Senate Banking Committee holds a confirmation hearing for Richard Cordray to be director of the newly created Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. And you know you're a redneck if you already know this. Comedian Jeff Foxworthy turns 53 today. I'm Avishai Artsy.
You're listening to Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Jeremy Hobson in for Kai Rizdal. So far, 2011 has turned out to be a very tough budget year for states, even by the standards of the last few years. The combination of a soft economy and the end of federal stimulus programs has left states with no choice but to cut back on some key services. In Missouri, lawmakers are weighing cuts to a program that provides tax credits to refurbish historic buildings. And as St. Louis Public Radio's Adam Allington reports, some are concerned that ending those credits will lead to even more job cuts.
Developer Craig Heller has been rehabbing historic buildings since the late 90s, and his fingerprints are all over downtown St. Louis. On a recent afternoon, Heller points out one building after another he's restored.
Well, this is the Farm and Home building, originally built by Kinloch Telephone back in 1907.
Now home to a bike commuter station and restaurant.
And then across the way is the Syndicate Trust building from 1905.
Today, seven floors of luxury condominiums. Heller's business took off after the state introduced a tax credit to reimburse one-fourth of the cost of historic rehabs. His company's refurbished more than 1.5 million square feet of office and warehouse space. And across the state, the tax credits reportedly generated more than $2 billion in economic development. But now the Missouri legislature may cut the program, and for Heller, that's a deal breaker.
If you're not sure you can get those credits, the last thing you want to do is buy a building and then be stuck with it.
No surprise a developer would like development tax credits, but cities also like the program because it puts vacant properties back on the tax rolls. And not too long ago, politicians of all stripes praised the program as a job creator. Since 1998, the state has spent $500 million on the tax credits. But the programs now run smack into the political drive for budget austerity.
It's simply a matter of priorities.
Governor Jay Nixon used to support the tax credits, but now he wants to divert that money to other programs.
We're 35th in K-12 funding. We're 45th in per capita funding for higher education. We can change that.
Supporters of historic tax credits counter that every penny the state spends comes back fourfold just in sales and income tax. Donovan Ripkema is director of Place Economics, a real estate consulting firm based in Washington, D.C.
I understand the need to say we got to watch state budgets and we're in economic trouble and tax collections down. I got all that. But underlying it all, we need jobs. And this is creating jobs and creating them in Missouri like nothing else in that state's doing.
Ripkema says historic tax credits provide more bang for the job-creating buck. Taxpayers are only on the hook for 25% of the cost to rehab historic buildings, compared to 100% for new highway and road projects. Still, Missouri's unemployment rate has been roughly 5% or more for the last 10 years. Luann Ridgway is a Republican state senator from Kansas City.
The fact of the matter is we have the biggest historic preservation tax credit program in all 50 states. So if historic preservation tax credits was the silver bullet, we would have a booming economy. We don't.
But some say the state is sending mixed messages. At the same time they're looking to cut historic tax credits, lawmakers are expected to offer hundreds of millions in tax relief for airport upgrades and incentives to encourage the growth of data centers in Missouri. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
There is one big bright spot in the U.S. economy, and it's about 360 miles up the California coast from where I sit right now. Silicon Valley is home to companies like Facebook, Google, and Apple, companies that have expanded during the recession and are now worth billions of dollars. But for some reason, they're not making a dent in our unemployment rate. Marketplace's Steve Henn is with us now from Silicon Valley to explain. Hi, Steve.
Hey.
Well, the tech industry has really been booming recently. Where are the jobs?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, and one of the problems is some of the biggest and most successful companies up here, especially the internet companies, are really built by design not to have to hire a lot of people. Hmm. You know, Facebook might be worth $100 billion, but do you have any idea how many people actually work there?
Oh, I know. It's something really small. It's like a couple thousand, right?
Yeah, it's 2,500. So for the size of that company, it's a really, really small number. And the problem is, you know, venture capitalists and entrepreneurs look at what Facebook has done and they want to imitate it. So one of the hotter startups in this area right now is this company called Airbnb.
Airbnb. I've never heard of that, Steve.
Okay, so it's a website that lets you rent your own apartment to someone else while you go on vacation. And you can go to it and you can look, you know, for apartments in Paris or, you know, really pretty much anywhere in the world to find a place to stay that might be a little bit nicer or cheaper than a hotel. And the real brilliance of this is that they don't own much of anything. They operate a website. If I'm renting my place, I do the work. And if I'm buying a place, I do the work.
So therefore, they don't really need to hire anybody.
That's right. If they have 100,000 people using their site or a million people or 100 million people, you know, their costs are more or less the same. And that's what investors are aiming for.
So that's what investors are aiming for. But what about the big behemoth out there in Silicon Valley? I'm talking about Apple, which just recently became, for a brief period, the biggest company in the world by market value. Aren't they hiring anybody?
Apple is hiring. It hired 12,000 people in the last year, which sounds like a big number. But when you compare it to the scale of the entire economy and all the jobs that the U.S. economy needs to get back on track, it's tiny. Apple employs just 46,000 people right now. And the reason it can do what it does with so few people is while it sells lots of devices, it doesn't actually make them. Over the last decade, it has outsourced almost all of its production to subcontractors. Most of those firms are in Asia.
So Apple is bringing down the unemployment rate in Asia, but not right here in the United States.
Not a lot.
Marketplace's Steve Henn in Silicon Valley. Steve, thanks.
Sure thing.
For many Americans, today is as much about food as it is about labor. So let's go next to Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and a place called Max Seafood that's been serving up eats to hungry beachgoers since 1995. A few years back, we stopped by to talk to one of the servers, and as you'll hear in this special Labor Day rebroadcast, she says the whole place really cooks.
With everything from the kitchen, it gets really hot. It's a lot hotter back there because we have our windows and we get a really nice breeze since we're right on the bay. But it gets pretty hot. Order number 8.
My name is Anna Hay and I,
number 9,
work for Max Seafood on the pier in Wellesley on Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Order number 10.
Job title. Not really. I guess expediter. But yeah. We have 2 people who take orders.
So a cup of chowder and a cup of biscuits.
And then
I'll either be getting the food from the kitchen or I get it from someone who gets it from the kitchen. And we do soups and drinks here. So we always have clam chowder and lobster bisque. And today our soup special is something that I can't actually say, but it's like a chicken soup. Something really ridiculous, I'm not really sure. Number 11. And then we send out the food to customers. Number 12. So I guess if you wanted to explain the restaurant part, it's definitely a clam shack with more than just shack food.
Julie, your oysters are ready.
These are oysters, Wellfleet oysters. It's what Wellfleet is famous for shellfish. Number 14, my cousins Mac and Alex Hay own Mac Seafood, and they started it a long time ago. And then about, 5 years ago, I started coming up here for the summers to work with them. And then I just graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Next year, I'm going to be a 10th grade English teacher at a boarding school in New Jersey. Number 16. Yes, going from handing out orders to teaching 10th grade English is definitely a big step, but I like to work here because I enjoy helping family and I like the people that I work with. But we don't always have enjoyable customers. Order number 35. I had a woman recently who was reading the menu wrong and she insisted that I was reading the menu wrong and she pointedly told me that she wanted me to realize that I was wrong in my face, that I was wrong, and I had to walk away because I would never be rude to a customer, but there's a point where you cannot be any nicer, or nice any longer.
Oh, it's good. Look at that.
We just always remember that the majority of people love their food and really do praise us for what we do. And
oh, man, this is really good. Thank you.
It's fun to be up here. You can't find a more beautiful place in the Cape, so that's a great thing about teaching. I can come back every summer.
Our thanks to Sean Cole for help with that story.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today from the core of the debate countries all across the world are in the midst of right now. Which is a bigger issue, creating jobs or reducing debt? Well, at the box office this weekend, Americans had a clear answer. The number one movie for the third week in a row was a film called The Help. If you haven't seen it yet, that's the one about black maids in the segregated South. And do you know what came in second place? An espionage thriller called The Debt. The Help beat The Debt. Just saying. And that is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the markets were closed for the Labor Day holiday. Our producers include Avishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Next time back here, we'll continue with our coverage of the breakdown, our economy one step at a time, with more on jobs and how to get America back to work. Plus, we'll look back on the economic legacy of September 11th, 2001. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Kai Rizdah will be back with that and more tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.